Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org. And by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, providing the financial expertise that helps both our members and our communities thrive. Thrivent Financial. Let's thrive.
Should we trust the numbers?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. We get some closely watched economic figures today. The Index of Leading Economic Indicators, or LEI. Will there be signs of recession in there? As Amy Scott reports, it might not matter.
Economists tell a joke about the LEI. They say it predicted 10 of the last 5 recessions. Michael Englund with Action Economics says the thing is, it's kind of true.
We tend to predict about twice as many downturns with the Leading Economic Indicators Index as actually have occurred real time.
England says that's because no two recessions are the same. The signals the economy sent out last recession won't necessarily show up the next time around. Take interest rates. Usually long-term rates are higher than short-term rates. When the situation reverses, it often means a severe downturn is around the corner. Wachovia analyst Tim Quinlan says when that happened last year, the LEI was screaming for a recession, but it never came.
They changed their methodology to account for that. And then it's been a little bit more reliable.
And so far, you might be pleased to hear, the index is pointing to a slowdown, not an all-out recession. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Oil prices are just a few cents from $100 a barrel this morning. Stock prices might take another hit today. In Japan, the Nikkei fell 2.5% to its lowest close in 16 months. European shares have fallen close to 2% so far. The Dow starts the morning at 13,010. It gained 51 points yesterday. The NASDAQ added 3. The S&P 500 climbed 6. Congress is trying to figure out ways to clean up the subprime mess and make sure it doesn't happen again. But commentator Robert Reich says the federal government already has the authority it needs to tackle the problem. It just isn't using it.
As someone who is in charge of one of the biggest regulatory agencies in the federal government, I can tell you regulations themselves don't do squat. They have to be vigorously enforced. And that means setting clear rules, having enough inspectors, and knowing when vigilance is required. So how to prevent another banking crisis that causes millions of families to lose their homes and investors to lose their shirts? The Federal Reserve already has all the authority it needs to do this. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913, as amended, and the Bank Holding Company Act of 1956 gave it power to monitor and regulate the entire banking system. The problem here was it failed to use this authority. It wasn't even paying attention. A few years back, when the Fed lowered short-term interest rates to 1%, money became so cheap, the Fed should have known lenders would hand it out to almost any borrower who could stand up straight. Especially when lenders could immediately fob off the loans to middlemen who bundled them and sold them off again. Big banks, hedge fund managers, everyone looked the other way because the party was too much fun. And then when the Fed started raising rates, it should have known the party would be over and there'd be a mess to clean up. But the Fed didn't, and still doesn't, pay enough attention to the effects of its rate settings on the practices of lenders and borrowers. It still doesn't have enough bank examiners who know what to look for, still doesn't know how to oversee giant financial conglomerates whose deals are so complex even their own top executives don't understand them, is even now disregarding the next banking crisis, which will be a wave of credit card defaults. Instead of pumping out new regulations, Congress should give the Fed the resources it needs to use the authority it already has, confirm new Fed governors who will be vigilant in overseeing the banking system, and hold all Fed appointees accountable for doing the job they're supposed to do.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. His new book is called Super Capitalism.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by BNY Mellon Wealth Management. Since 1784, helping successful individuals and families protect and maximize wealth. BNYMellonWealthManagement.com. And by Grant Thornton, dedicated to serving their clients worldwide with a passion for the business of accounting. On the web at GrantThornton.com. Science and technology reports are supported by Boston Scientific, committed to delivering what's next in medical technology to help clinicians improve and extend lives. BostonScientific.com.
Here's something you might think about before you sit down for Thanksgiving dinner. Where did the food come from? Today, the food we eat is transported from all corners of the world. In a new book, author Sarah Murray takes a look at our movable feasts. Sarah, how is food transportation affecting the global economy?
It's having a huge impact. We're really sourcing food from everywhere you can think of. It's changing economies both here and overseas. If we can now get products from places like Africa, that has made a huge impact to countries like that. At the same time, of course, there are the worries that we've had recently from China and other places with the contamination of food. So we have to think much more carefully about safety regulations and protecting our food supply.
Yeah, obviously that's got to be one of the chief concerns right now. Are we going to reverse course here and start trying to produce more food ourselves so we don't have to worry about this?
Well, that's what a lot of people might say. But on the other hand, if you look at some of the food scares, a lot of them have actually, they're not as well publicized, but a lot of them come from local producers that are producing in the U.S. So transportation per se is not the problem here. It's actually, regulating the producers of our food.
One of the big issues right now is sustainability, the carbon footprint, and everybody's pointing to transportation as one of the main culprits. What did you find when you went around the world in terms of where the environmental impact is coming from with food?
When you start to look at agriculture, you find that the emissions from that industry are vast, whether it's feedstocks for cattle or farm machinery, all sorts of energy is used in processing food. Once you start to look at that, you realize that actually the transportation is a relatively small part of that. And in fact, what one should be really looking at, if we're talking about trying to lower the carbon emissions of our food supply, is looking far more broadly at the sustainability of food production as a whole. That might mean that some food could be produced locally and it would be more sustainable, but it might also mean that sourcing food from somewhere where farming practices are more sustainable could be a better option.
Sarah Murray. Her book is called Movable Feasts. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. It was great talking to you.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and happy Thanksgiving.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.